It's the Bristol Arts Show with Billy Quain, and joining me in the studio today are Alison Bromelow and Hugh Holden. The green spaces of Bristol are an essential ingredient to what informs the heartbeat of the city. Should we expand on this slightly, first of all, the user groups of the Bristol green spaces?
What the connection with arts, I think, is that the parks and informal green space, formal parks and green spaces, are open to everybody. Mm-hmm. They're open for events. It's particularly important that they're open for children. We encourage all parks groups, city council and local residents always want to see things happening in their parks, particularly small festivals, music, exercise, that sort of thing. So I think there is justification for us being here in that respect.
Undoubtedly. Also, I mean, it's an essential ingredient to Bristol's architecture because the surroundings in which buildings sit provide the frame for the whole thing. So I actually believe, architecturally speaking, the green spaces are extraordinarily important too.
I'd certainly go along with that. My local park has a very fine church in the middle of it, which wouldn't be appreciated if it weren't surrounded by green space that you can stand back and get a good view of it.
So, absolutely.
Yes.
So there we go. We've covered the arts and your justification for being here.
Most of the stuff being sold is what's called low amenity value open space. There are, as far as I can tell, only two actual parks.
Okay.
All the rest are essentially, I won't say odds and ends, because people are very proud and fond of their odds and ends of green spaces. Mm-hmm. But they aren't formal parks. Can I just explain very briefly where it's coming from?
Please do.
Okay. What you're talking about are things called the area green space plans. Mm-hmm. The Parks and Green Spaces strategy was a result of a central government dictate in the early 2000s requiring Bristol and all of other councils to find out how much land it had. Surprisingly, very few councils knew how much green space they were responsible for. So Bristol was one of the first. And between 2005, 2008, it basically did a stock take of all the green space it had and looked at the condition of that green space and found out that the park's maintenance budget has been cut by about half since the early 1980s. So Bristol's green space was in very poor condition, and the figure that they arrived at to put it into a decent enough condition so it would be equivalent to comparable cities' green spaces, like Sheffield or Liverpool or places like that, was a figure of £90 million over 20 years. That was obviously, certainly not in 2007 or 2008, going to come from public funds, because there wasn't that amount of cash around. And in terms of public spending cuts, it certainly isn't going to happen. So that money had to be found from somewhere. And the approach Bristol took was to devise very strict standards of how much green space each person should have within 100 metres?
Within distance standards.
Yeah, distance standards.
So that anybody can walk to their local playground within 10 minutes or walk to the nearest green space within 9 minutes. And those were the standards they adopted.
Also to lay down standards of what quality that green space should be so that people wanted to go to space that they could get to. Once they'd laid down the standards, they obviously then had to work out how to fund it. The conclusion they came to get this £90 million, was to sell off what was regarded as low amenity value using the criteria we've just been talking about, the quality standards and the distance standards. Once this was done through the area green space plans, which weren't perfect, they then went out for 5 months consultation period, came back, and that's where all the political furore came from. After 5 months of consultation, they came back, looked at it, and changed a lot of the, or withdrew from disposal a lot of the space that they'd originally proposed as a direct result of public consultation. So to accuse Gary Hopkins of flogging off green space to cut costs is simply untrue.
My understanding was a lot of the higher maintenance green spaces were being sold to provide 30,000 extra homes that were required, which suggests to me that the green spaces not only were being sold off, they weren't being sold off for any altruistic reason. They weren't being sold off to charities or to public-private partnerships. They were being sold to put houses on them.
What's been happening in Bristol is they're trying to identify how they're going to cope with an estimated population increase of, as you say, around 30,000. The figure's come and gone up and down from 25 to 36 and is now, they think, around 30,000. Bristol has agreed that it can find enough spaces, which would be brownfield land first, mm-hmm. But it would also be any other land that is not needed by other people for other things, which could be parks, it could also be, I don't know, other open space. part of the reason for identifying those areas in Bristol is that we didn't want the people that were consulted about all this agreed that they didn't want houses to be built on the green belt around the outside of Bristol. So that means that you're trying to find spaces within what is already quite a densely populated area. So you're trying to find areas where you can put more houses in the centre of Bristol, because then we've all got greenbelt land around the edge of Bristol that we can go to. It also means, you know, from the point of view of sustainability, people are not having to drive from greater and greater distances into the middle of Bristol. So that was the pressure. It's coming not through the parks and green spaces sort of angle. It's coming through the whole population increase and how Bristol is going to have to deal with all these extra people moving into Bristol.
But can you see my point that the shedding of these green spaces seems to come with an automatic rubber stamp of planning permission on these lands?
No, because there's a lot more work still to be done on that. The areas that have been identified for disposal have still got to go through the planning process. There's a whole issue about floodplains. Some of the sites that they've identified as being available for disposal, they've got to look at and see whether they can actually get housing on it. Some of the sites that have been identified for disposal are not identified for total disposal, but for parts of it being disposed. And that's a whole other sort of area of discussion, this idea of whether putting houses along the edges of parks so that you've got houses that overlook the parks and make it safer.
Aren't there already houses that are overlooking the parks, which are the ones commanding a premium?
You couldn't possibly comment on that.
It's time for a piece of music, and because Alison Brumelow and Hugh Holden, it is an ever-changing world, I thought I'd play some Hoagy Carmichael for you. It's the Bristol Arts Show with Billy Quain, and joining me in the studio today are Alison Brumelow and Hugh Holden. Hugh Holden is of the Bristol Parks Forum, and Alison Brumelow, whilst you help out with the Bristol Parks Forum on a voluntary basis, your main affiliate is
the Bristol Neighbourhood Planning Network.
That's fantastic. We've flagged up a few of the issues that I plan to spend some time debunking with you. There's a lot of mythology and a lot of inaccurate statistics which are being bandied around this whole issue. You mentioned while we were listening to Hoagy Carmichael, when I spoke to John Frankel no more than a month ago, there was some suggestion that 75% of Bristol's green spaces were going to be shed. So what is the true figure?
The true figure at the moment is about 2%. Bristol has something like 1,500 hectares of green space, which is all sorts of green space, which is publicly accessible. That doesn't include schools or whatever. It's publicly accessible green space. And Bristol would, in fact, end up with more, because it's in the final very long stages of taking into public ownership, Bristol's ownership, Stoke Park. So it'll actually end up with more green space than it started with, though that's almost coincidental, I have to say.
Let's talk about the areas that are densely populated with high-rise tower blocks. The green spaces were never brought up to the standard that they should have been from day one.
There are also spaces that people don't feel any ownership of, because they're not, I'm sorry to go back to this overlooking thing, but there's not that sort of feeling of a community living around a green space, which happens in maybe older parts of the city. So those very wide open green spaces, which, as you say, weren't properly developed and may have rusting children's play area that's probably been vandalised to death, and a couple of trees that have had their bark ripped off, and they are very sad.
Well, I thought you were going to say rusting children.
those as well, yes.
What's definitely going, and from your two point of view, are you sorry to see it go?
My own point of view is that were it possible, I believe, to raise the cash any other way, and I'd like any opponent to come up with another way of funding it, then I would personally, and I mean speaking personally, quite happy join the Not One Blade of Grass to Be Sold group.
I think we all would. That was certainly discussed at length.
There is no other way of raising a huge amount of money in the middle of what looks like vast public spending cuts. So something has to give. If you're going to get, you can retain every green space if you want squalid, substandard green spaces. But if you don't, what do you do about it?
You earlier mentioned £90 million over 20 years.
Yep.
Fairly rudimentary mental arithmetic to me suggests that's £4.25 million per year. Bristol is a city of about 400,000 or so. So that's a tenner each to raise this 90 million quid tomorrow.
So are you suggesting everybody dips in their pocket?
That's a possible solution. However, I'm not making that suggestion. I'm wanting to know how much Bristol City Council plans to raise by the sale of these 26 or so earmarked sites.
I think that depends on the land values at the time, and the Parks Forum is very insistent, as I believe the Labour and Conservative parties are, and the all political parties and the Parks Forum are very insistent that no land is sold until land prices pick up again. There's no point in flogging off land cheaply now so developers can acquire land banks at Bristol City Council's expense, right?
How much are they hoping to raise by this? Asset strip, but you know, you're fighting, I have to say, a good corner to counter my argument.
It's very difficult to get any council officer to look into their crystal ball because they aren't going to do it.
Who knows the land prices are, but they've identified 44 hectares and the 90 million originally that they were aiming for. At that stage, land values were £1 million a hectare. Mm-hmm. So we were looking at possible loss of 90 hectares of space. They've identified 44 hectares
of
space.
So that's half of it has been withdrawn.
So they're halfway there if land values go back to what they were at the point where the Parks and Green Spaces strategy was adopted
in 2008.
Is there a case for turning this land over to communities?
Something approached a sort of dig for victory thing in World War II.
Well, why not?
And there are certain communities
that
do.
I think
possibly Southville. And there's a lot of groups in the Parks Forum that do a lot of work in parks to help with the underfunded maintenance. You know, our parks group goes out and cuts back brambles and plants hedges. So we fundraise for all those things. So groups are already doing a hell of a lot to support financially and with their own labour what is an underfunded part of the council.
I'm off to plant trees in our local park this afternoon as soon as I finish here. Just going back to, could you hand it over to communities? These days, trying to run anything, even something as apparently simple as a park, it's quite a technical job. You need to be able to have both the volunteers and the skills to employ contractors, do insurance assessments, fix play equipment. It's quite a skilled job, and people don't really have either the time or the expertise to do that, and they certainly don't have the funding. The trouble is, if you just simply hand green space over to communities, what would tend to happen, it seems to have happened in other parts of the country, particularly around Salford, because we're in touch with other parks forums throughout the country, is that green space gets dumped on people and then they have to spend all their time raising funding to stop it going into an even worse condition. So you end up essentially cutting all the public money for public spaces, but demanding that the public have access, but somebody else does all of the work. And that seems a very odd way of going around what is the only free and open public service that is accessible to every single person in every part of the city.
Hugh Holden and Alison Bromlow, pin your ears back, because we're going to take a little bit of Chumbawamba. This is a beautiful track called The Devil's Interval. Devil's Interval. There you go. You see a bit of truculent celloing right at the end of that. That was Chumbawamba, who have reimagined themselves as a fully bona fide, politically conscious folk group these days, and they're absolutely fantastic. I saw them not long ago at the Folk House, and it was the best tenor I spent in a long time, I can tell you.
And I'd agree with that anyway. So
Hugh Holden agrees. There you go. You've got the Hugh Holden stamp of approval. Hugh Holden of the Bristol Parks Forum and Alison Bromlow are in the Bristol Arts Show studio with me, Billy Quain, on BCF. Are the green spaces in the poor areas being flogged off so that we can keep the posh areas posh?
No, is the answer to that. And any suggestion to that end is political tosh, I think. There is, for example, no green space identified or proposed for sale in Ashley Eastern and Lawrence Hill Neighbourhood Partnership, which covers St Paul's, Eastern, Lawrence Hill, St Werburgh's, that area, or in Bedminster at all. There's absolutely none. I think Barton Hill, for example, is one of the most deprived areas of the city. There's no suggestion that could possibly be regarded as a wealthy area.
Could I counter your argument to say that in the wards you've mentioned, there isn't that much green space? Bedminster maybe being the exception with Grevelsmith Park and a few of the others, but certainly...
Yeah, but that's precisely why. To go right back to the intro we had when we came in, we said that there was a quantity standard per head for Bristol's population. It's 18 square metres per head. In the old built-up areas, which includes, obviously, Clifton and Bishopston, but it's also where the workers live in the other areas, right? St. Wilbur's, everywhere like that, St. Paul's. There is nowhere near that amount of green space. So the disposal suggestions were based on simply on the amount of green space. It's got nothing to do with how affluent an area is. The majority of the green space within the city boundary is... It's more a question of, I think, the age of development, when areas were developed or built, rather than how much they're worth now. I mean, obviously, places like, I don't know, Hartcliffe, Stockwood, I understand there's a lot of genuine anger out in Stockwood. Areas like that were built with a much lower population density. I've got no idea what, you know.
Fine, nor do I.
So they have got much more green space per head. Hengrove, for example, the Bristol standard, as I say, is 18 square metres per head. Uh-huh. Hengrove has 37 square metres per head at present. Stock, which I assume is down here, has 64, 84. You know, there's a lot of green space in these areas.
Maybe they just haven't publicised this well. The PR has not been good, I would argue.
As you yourself mentioned, I think, there's been a lot of stuff in the Evening Post. There's been a lot of stuff on Points West, presumably on ITV. It's been in Our City, which is the Bristol City Council rag, propaganda rag that goes through every door, you know, four times a year, whatever it is, which I appreciate that very few people read, but it has been in there two or three times.
The number of consultation events that they've...
Yeah, there's huge amounts of consultation, which...
It's unprecedented in the city. Yeah, How many people have been contacted?
There has been 5 months of information. I was sitting next to somebody at a full meeting in the council house, and they said, well, they should have put a leaflet through my door. I didn't know about it. This was 4 months into the consultation. I don't think you can blame the council for not leafleting every single individual household.
Because they did deliver Our City to every household, and if people don't read it, then it's very difficult to know how to get to them.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. It's always going to be divisive, frankly. However, you mentioned there was a five-month consultation. Can we highlight a couple of the success stories or the community groups who said... No, absolutely not. Thank you very much. We're very fond of our green spaces. We're very fond of our common land. Bearing in mind, I thought common land, you've got a right to graze and stuff. That land is sacrosanct and doesn't actually belong to any city council, although they do maintain it.
Well, there are no plans to dispose of common land. End of story.
Okay.
Not legal commons. None whatsoever. There is an area just off Hawfield Common, which is a Wellington Hill Plainfields.
Mm-hmm. That was one that went through the whole process and still appeared in front of the Cabinet, because obviously a number of spaces were weeded out along the way that Hugh and I don't know about, because we don't know every green space in Bristol, believe it or not. But Wellington Hill did actually come to the Cabinet to decide about disposal, because there is quite a large area in Hawfield Common, Friends of Hawfield Common, there's play area, there's all that green space. But it was saved because the local people put forward a good case for it actually providing for a specific form of amenity, of play space, that isn't replicatable in any area close to it. And that was the whole point of it, that a green space has a particular use, was then identified through the Parks and Green Spaces strategy as needing to be protected. And so that one was saved, which does sound as if somebody was listening to what local people were saying to me.
If I can just add to that as well, we talked about quality standards and quantity standards. The third string, which came very much to the fore during the consultation period, was the on-site assessments done by council officers. And frankly, a lot of those were wrong, because they had a very short time frame to do it. And that was particularly the case in places like Wellington Hill, I think, where they just went and looked at it and said, oh, it's not used. But because the community got together and said, this is not low amenity value, it's high amenity value, the politicians looked at it and took a political decision to say, okay, we got this wrong, we'll withdraw it from sale. It was a valid consultation. Having said that, there are places like the Daisy Field out in Shire where they didn't get the result they wanted. And as a parts forum, we would encourage them to keep on fighting all the way through the planning process when it comes up.
So what's the next step now for the people who are directly affected by the ones that have been earmarked for sale or for potential disposal, should we say?
Well, first, it's not going to happen yet because the land values aren't good enough.
And also it's not going to happen yet because the planning officers have to look at it and say whether or not they'd be happy with houses being built on those sites. We've got all of that to go through, whether or not these are suitable sites for development. So,
I'm biting my tongue hard, Alison, because it turns out, no matter what the planning office says, if we look at the case of Sainsbury's, it turns out big business will always get its way in Bristol.
All I can say is that the City Council has planning policies, and what will happen under the assessment of the parks is whether or not it will go on the local plan as being identified for residential use. What we can never do is protect against some extremely highly paid
lawyer
overturning policy, and that's a constant fight, not just for parks groups but for every citizen in Bristol. We've seen a lot of developments happen on land that is totally counter to Bristol City Council's policies, and believe us, that's through the Neighbourhood Planning Network. That's one of the things that frustrates us most. Why do we bother to put all this hard work in trying to respond to planning applications and so forth if big business can just pay their way into getting the planning permission they want?
And let's hope that the council sticks by planning law and enforces the town green on the Bristol City Stadium potential site, because that is law.
The integrity of the planning committee has been massively damaged by the to-ing and fro-ing of the last few weeks. The process can no longer be trusted.
I have no background information on why the committee was changed, but I do know that one of the councillors that was on the original committee did have a lot of extremely unpleasant, threatening things happen to her, threats telling her that they knew where her children went to school, where she lived. You know, that's really just unacceptable behaviour on anybody's part, and it's a great shame that there isn't more going to be done legally against those people, because quite honestly, if I'd been on that planning committee, I'd have been really scared too.
Dare I say, the result of the revised planning decision vindicates all of that.
Vindicates it from the point of view of the supporters, or some of the less well-behaved supporters. Yes, it was effective.
Yes.
But that's not good, is it? No.
No. Again, we come back to the point whether or not Bristol City Council can be trusted, certainly the planning authority can be trusted, to do what's right for the city on the newly released green spaces.
There is a high level of extreme cynicism in that respect. As park groups, all we can do is fight as hard as we can, as we've been doing for years. I think there's something like 50 green spaces have been sold since 2000, according to the little list I've just glanced at here. The idea of this whole parks and green spaces stuff, the area of green space stuff, is to involve local people in saying, this green space, having been through all this stuff, is now protected. If a developer comes along, you now have another tool to fight big business or feeble councillors. Yeah, I mean, that's all I can say. But from a parts forum point of view,
as adopted as a strategy, it then becomes a piece of evidence that can then be used to hire powers, which can be the sort of central government powers or the planning inspectorate and so on, that are over the top of the local council or local planning authority, which is Bristol City Council. So we can only hope that by actually getting some decent, strong legislation and strategic level standards adopted in Bristol, that will give greater protection.
We do have an outside hope, Paul, that the coalition government is proposing at the moment a thing called the localism bill. Nobody seems to know how it's going to work yet. But in theory, that should give local communities more legal powers to use things like this, use things like these plans, to fight off big business.
It's getting very heavy. God almighty.
It's getting very heavy, and if you don't stop, we're all going to stop volunteering and doing anything, because you know, what's the point? We might as well go home and shoot ourselves.
Let's pick it back up again. This is a favourite of mine. It's Ger Wolf with The Prodigal Child.
You long for the star and the plough.
Let's That's Jer Wolfe, The Prodigal Child. I'm delighted to say Hugh Holden and Alison Brumlow are still locked into the BCFM studio. We're nearly out of time, and I'm terribly sorry to both of you that we haven't really covered everything in as much detail as I would have liked. Where do we stand, and how can me or my neighbours or anybody else throw their shoulder behind the campaign to stop this happening or to adjust the outcome of what may happen?
All I can suggest to that people do at the moment is Bristol Parks Forum has a very good website. If you just Google in Bristol Parks Forum, there's more information on that than you will find from any council website or from any well-intentioned but perhaps not very well-informed local group. Go there, look everything up, find out where we're at and what you can do next.
Okay, so what's the email address that I can find the Bristol Parks Forum on?
I think it's bristolparksforum.org.uk, is it?
Excellent. And that's more navigable, easily.
Much more navigable.
Good.
And it has a list of parks groups, so if you're a local person and want to find out who's in your area looking at your park,
contact details,
you can find out the parks group that's operating.
Excellent. Can I also sign up to Dig a Tree?
You can.
I have your contact details, but what about anybody else who would like to get involved with some of the other initiatives or volunteer to any of the organisations you're involved with?
Through the Bristol Parks Forum, if parks is what you're interested in, if the planning stage is what you're interested in, then Bristol NPN for Neighbourhood Planning Network.
And finally, if there's time, I'm not sure. I also chair a thing called the Bristol Tree Forum, which is trying to increase Bristol's tree canopy from its present 13% to 30% over the next 20 or so years. We'd love to get people involved in that as well. There's a link on that on the Parks Forum website.
So it's definitely the Bristol Parks Forum.
It's definitely the Bristol Parks Forum.
Bristol Parks Forum is the thing.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, Alison Brumlow and Hugh Holden, first of all, thank you very, very much. Have you enjoyed yourselves?
Yes, we have.
Yeah, surprisingly so.
Are you going to come back and see me again sometime?
We might very well.
This is too important to just pop up once and then be left behind. I'm sure there are an awful lot of vested parties would like us to leave it alone.
I'm sure.
Good.
I'm sure the Parks Forum worked.
I sincerely hope not. Thank you both very, very much for your time. It's been a thoroughly entertaining morning and, dare I say it, informative and educational too. My name is Billy Quinn. This has been the Bristol Arts Show.
BCFM is the community radio station for Bristol and is here to give everybody in Bristol a